What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Hot Take, where I, along with my co-hosts Nat and Lawrence, give you our hottest takes on all things NBA. This is part two of our GOAT debate, talking about who is the greatest player of all time between Michael Jordan and LeBron James. But, fellas, before we get into that, just some free agency buzz news that just dropped earlier this afternoon is that Chris Paul has been traded to the Phoenix Suns. And before we started recording, Nat brought up a really good point. One of our earlier episodes, when we did our early predictions for next season, you know, who would be the top eight from the West, top eight from the East, I had the Suns making it into the top eight, making it to the playoffs. And that was without Chris Paul. You know, I think they had a nice young roster. Unfortunately, I feel like one key piece that they traded away was Kelly Oubre, but at the same time, they went 8-0 without him in, you know, the bubble. So I think when you add Chris Paul, another like score, this gives you the ability to let Devin Booker, you know, kind of move off ball, give him more opportunities. You have a true point guard in Phoenix. So Lawrence, what do you think about Chris Paul in Phoenix?
I think he's a good fit. He can provide as a mentor for all those young guys there in Phoenix, especially, you know, Devin Booker, like you said. And it's going to be exciting to see what Devin Booker does with a true point guard.
I agree. What about you, Nat?
First, let me apologize to you for clowning you for that choice in your top eight. I think in the previous episodes, I was like, there's no way the Suns are going to be in the top eight. But look, look where we are now. It's Chris Paul is in, you know, the valley. And yeah, I think he'll be top five. Well, the Suns will be top five, I think, now in the West this coming season. But this is going to be good for Devin Booker.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. Top five. I'm carrying your prediction even further. But yeah, I think Chris Paul will be great there. He's gonna serve as a veteran leadership for all those youngins over there. And plus, you know, plus Coach Monty, who's been great in the bubble. I think it's gonna be a good balance slash good connection with all of them.
Lawrence brought up a good point too. You know, last season they had Ricky Rubio. It was his first season with the Suns, and look how much they were able to accomplish with him as the point guard, getting Devin Booker, you know, free looks and stuff like that. How much more with, you know, the savviness of a Chris Paul. It'd be interesting to see what they do this year. So Nat predicts they're going to make, you know, top five out of the West. I still think they'll be somewhere in, you know, the 5 to 8 range. I think they'll fall somewhere in there.
Right.
Now to the main course. Now that we've had our appetizer.
To the filet mignon.
Let's get it going. So, last week we did part one. We talked mainly about Michael Jordan and LeBron James from a statistical point of view, as well as their accolades. Today we're going to focus mainly on them as players and them as teammates. But, you know, I feel like you guys were so prepared last week, and I wasn't. So I'm not going to lie. I listened to the episode again, and I was like, oh, man, I should have said this. I should have said that. And I took note of them.
Oh, so, man.
As we kind of go into it, I figure, you know, it'll segue into them being players, them being teammates, you know, like how do they fare? One of the things that you guys brought up statistically was the comparison between LeBron and Mike in elimination games. And, you know, Nat gave us the rundown on like the stats, the numbers, how LeBron kind of bested LeBron in elimination games.
Jordan.
But sorry. What? Yes, how LeBron bested Jordan. Yeah. But what I was referring to is final seconds, right? We were talking about in final seconds, who do we want taking the last shot? Mm-hmm. Right? So my argument was I want Mike taking the last shot. Because, like, yes, maybe in the final, like, 2 minutes, you know, LeBron is going to have better numbers. But when it comes to my team being down 1 point or you need a bucket, you know, in 90 seconds or less, I want Mike taking the last shot. That was the point I was trying to get across. Not necessarily like in elimination games or instances because, especially in the finals, Mike never faced, you know, elimination. He never had to go to a game seven. So that was my argument there. That was the first thing. One of the other arguments that you guys brought up, which was a very valid argument, Lawrence brought up the coaches, right?
Yep.
You know, there we go. You have Phil Jackson. Even in college, you have Dean Smith, right?
Yep.
And I agreed with you, but in hindsight, I should have been like, you know what? When you think about it, let me put it to you this way, right? Prior to the Bulls signing Phil Jackson, did anybody know who Phil Jackson was? You know, anybody who knows basketball would know him because he played in the, in the league. You know, he played for the Knicks. But as a coach, you know, did anybody really know him? No. I feel like people were sleeping on him. Like he was unproven. You know, he was coaching in, where was it, like Brazil or something like that, somewhere in South America.
Somewhere like
overseas, based on the documentary. I mean, same with Dean Smith. I feel like, you know, you make the argument like, you know, who was Dean Smith? Like, I guess my point was, right, yes, these are amazing coaches, but if it wasn't for Mike, you know, would they have been that well known? Like if with the Bulls, for example, Phil Jackson, if you put any player, if you take Mike out of the equation, right? Let's say he didn't play under Phil Jackson, he played somewhere else, and Phil Jackson instituted that triangle offense, do they win, you know, back-to-back-to-back championships?
Well, the triangle was made for Michael Jordan. A good coach is going to use his players and make the best game plan possible, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, one of the other things, and I'm glad you mentioned the triangle, right? Because what I was saying in the last episode was the triangle was to get the ball out of Mike's hands. Mm-hmm. And like Nat brought up the point, like, oh, you see, like they wanted the ball out of his hands so that he would have to share the ball. But you also have to understand that prior to the implementation of the triangle offense, Mike had to carry the team by himself. Because look at the teammates that he had all the way up until that point.
That sounds familiar to someone else.
Can you name some of those teammates?
Interesting.
That's the thing. You know, you're talking like the early 80s. Like the only one I can like name right off the top of my head in the early 80s, you know, when Mike was first coming up, was Charles Oakley. You know, but after Oak left, like, you know, who did they have really? So, of course, he had to kind of carry his team, you know, drop 63 on the Boston Celtics and, you know, try to plow his way through the bad boy Pistons. Another point that you guys brought up, too, about, you know, especially in the 80s, Lawrence is the one that brought it up, actually, was that these teams that Mike had to play in the finals, none of them were in their prime. If I'm not mistaken, that's
except
what
Charles Barkley
said, right? Well, I mean, when you think about it, in the 80s, you have Magic and you have Larry in their primes. And you can make the argument like, oh, Mike couldn't beat them, you know, in their prime. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that in a second. You know, when he played, for example, I already talked about the Lakers in 91. You know, Magic Johnson was no fish out of water. 92, you had Clyde Drexler. Yeah, Cliff Robinson, you know, Uncle Cliff. He was one of the more dominant big men in the NBA in the early 90s. 93, you had Barkley, you had Dan Marjolet, Danny Ainge. And then, like, if I'm not mistaken, they played the Jazz twice, right?
Yes.
Both times. You can make the argument they weren't in the prime, but they were around the same age. John Stockton and Jordan were around the same age.
Right.
Karl Malone, I think, was younger than the two of them.
Right.
So he was still in his prime. And then when they played the Sonics, you know, you have Gary Payton still in his prime. You have Sean Kemp still in his prime. You know, you had a couple other players for the Sonics that were still in their prime. And you had, you know, George Karl as your head coach, you know, one of the best coaches of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, that was – but back to the argument about him not being able to beat Magic and
Bird
in his prime. I just wanted to just give you guys some numbers, right? I looked up like how many all-stars did Michael Jordan play with, right? And they give you a breakdown. So first they started with Larry Bird. In Larry Bird's career, he played with seven all-stars. At one point in time, he played with a total of 7 All-Stars. LeBron James has the next amount of All-Star teammates that he has played with. LeBron James has played with also 7 All-Stars throughout his career. Kobe Bryant, the late, great Kobe Bryant, played with 6 All-Stars. Magic Johnson played with 5 All-Stars. Michael Jordan, erstwhile, only played with 1 All-Star in his whole career with the Bulls.
Uh-huh.
That 1 All-Star was Scottie Pippen.
Right.
So that was my argument for him not being able to beat Magic and Bird in their prime, because in their prime, they had way more All-Stars than Jordan had. Again, you know, Jordan, especially in the early 80s, all he had was like Charles Oakley, who was kind of already on not necessarily on the decline, but he didn't stay in Chicago for too long.
Right.
But
wait, I mean, did Jordan have Pippen when he was facing Magic and Larry Bird?
Pippen came into the picture, I think it was the 88-89 season or the 89-90 season. So I know for the first championship.
Was he an All-Star at that time?
I don't think he was an All-Star his first season. I think it was his second season probably.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah. So that was one of the takes I had about.
Wait. So do you want to go over Jordan's teammates? Because I got a whole list right here too. I got a whole list of like, who he had.
Over Jordan's teammates? Do you want to get
this list? Yeah, because you're saying
that. How many of them are All-Stars? Only one was an All-Star.
But I mean, you also have to take into consideration, right? There are some other stars in that East at the time, too. So it snubbed some of those people on those Bulls teams from getting All-Star selections.
That's a good point.
That just goes to show you how competitive the East was during his time. Meanwhile, right, LeBron in 2007 basically walked to the NBA Finals carrying his team.
Because no one wanted to go to the East because of LeBron. Because LeBron was easy straight to the finals every year. No one wanted to go to the East. No one wanted to go to the East and face LeBron. That's scary.
In the East, right? Mind you, in the East, you're talking about the East being scary. That was 2007. The year prior, the NBA champions came from the East, which were the Miami Heat.
Right.
The season before that, who won in 05?
I think that was the Spurs or Pistons.
I think it was the Spurs. And then the year before that was the Pistons. So during that time, you had the Pistons, but then when LeBron, and then you had Miami, right? The Pistons were no longer the Pistons. Miami, Dwayne Wade got injured. He had a separated shoulder. Shaq was no longer the same. So Miami, they went from being NBA champions to being bottom of the East.
Right.
And then you have, we talked about this in the last episode, the Boston Celtics weren't even the Boston Celtics yet. You know, they didn't have their big three. So the East at that time, when he made it to the NBA Finals, was not hyper-competitive. Whereas, you know, during Jordan's time, he had to go through so many people just coming out of the East, right? I mean, even in the playoffs, I also did my research on this, right? Just a list of people eliminated by Michael Jordan. There are 20 Hall of Famers. Not All-Stars, but Hall of Famers. Charles Barkley, Vlade Divac, Clyde Drexler, Joe Dumars, Patrick Ewing, Magic Johnson, Karl Malone, Reggie Miller, DK Mutombo, Shaq, Robert Parrish, Gary Payton, Dennis Rodman, Jack Sigma, John Stockton, Isaiah Thomas. 20 Hall of Famers eliminated by Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people always talk. One of the other arguments you guys brought up in the last episode, right, was the level of competition.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James has actually faced more Hall of Famers. LeBron has faced more Hall of Famers, but the reason is because these Hall of Famers, they join up together. They form super teams.
Right.
So you have all these guys that are kind of coming together to play on one team, whereas during Mike's time, it was like blasphemous if, you know, for example, Magic and Bird wanted to team up, or, you know,
Wait,
Shaq
so
and Jordan.
Wait, you're feeding into our argument that LeBron had tougher competition.
There we go.
Well, see, this is the thing. It seems like he had tougher competition, but in reality, it was Mike who had tougher competition. Here's my argument. In the East, we're talking about just the East.
Mm-hmm.
The East was a lot stronger during Jordan's era.
Okay.
Especially because of the center position.
Right.
Which was actually relevant in the 90s. He had to face Hall of Fame centers like Shaq, Patrick Ewing,
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Alonzo Mourning and DK Mutombo. In thus far in his career, in terms of Hall of Fame centers, LeBron has only faced one in the finals. Oh, not in the finals, but I'm assuming in the playoffs, which is Dwight Howard.
Right.
Yes.
You know, Dwight Howard is going to be a Hall of Famer. Today's NBA is all about like super teams, whereas like individuality of teams, like during the 90s, you don't have that anymore. So in Jordan's era, he wasn't facing the same teams at such a high frequency. Like, mm-hmm. for example, James, right? He played the Spurs twice. He played the Warriors how many times? You know, so you're almost facing the same competition every single time. You kind of know how that team plays each and every time because you face them so many different times.
But it's still a good team, though.
It is still a good team. But that's also why LeBron has faced more Hall of Famers, because they've joined together to form super teams.
Right.
So in theory, that's why he was able to face more Hall of Famers, whereas Mike, he eliminated only 20, whereas LeBron has faced, let's say, for example, like 30. And it's because during Mike's time, these Hall of Famers didn't join together. They didn't, you know, play on the same team and form super teams. Now, one of the arguments you can make, right? Like, for example, he's played against people like Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. He played them three times. He played Tim and Manu and Parker, you know, three times. And then you have like Kevin Durant. He faced him twice. Kawhi Leonard, he faced him twice. He got Dirk, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. And one of the arguments we made last episode was Jason Kidd. 2011, he had to go up against Dirk and Jason Kidd and Tyson Chandler and Jason Terry.
Yeah.
Number one, Jason Terry was way beyond his prime. Number two, Jason Kidd was way out of his prime. I think he retired not too long after. And then you have Dirk on the decline also.
What? Dirk played for like 10 more years.
Okay, granted. Decline. But how many of those 10 years were quality years?
Let's say five.
Even
like then. He won an MVP like 3 years before that, right?
Who, Dirk?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I mean, like, look at the NBA now. Like, 3 years, that's a long time. You know, you could have a huge drop-off in 3 years.
Wait, so are you saying that even though LeBron has faced more Hall of Famers, his competition was still not as fierce or not as
elite
as Jordan's? Is that what you're trying to say here?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm pointing out is, number one, yes, LeBron has faced more Hall of Famers, but because it's the era of super teams. Number two, some of those quote-unquote super teams that he has faced aren't necessarily like super-duper teams. For example, the first time he played against Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, you know, for the mm-hmm. Oklahoma City Thunder.
Right.
James Harden was not the superstar that he is now when he played for the Thunder.
Okay, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. You know,
but he was still sixth man of the year that year.
He was still sixth man, yes. But that's him being sixth man, whereas LeBron had Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, legitimate all-stars, guys who were, you know, still at the peak of their game. Well, D-Wade was kind of on the decline by that time. But still, mm-hmm. he was one of the top shooting guards in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They were still a tough team to face. Okay, see. They even had Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka led the 2010s.
Even a Kendrick Perkins veteran.
That's right.
Right. But if you're talking about at that point, right, let's say KD had been in the league like 5 years, Westbrook like 4 years, James Harden was probably like his, you know, first or second year. Same with Serge. Serge hadn't been in the league, you know, all too long. Whereas you have guys like LeBron, Wade, and Bosh, you know, that big three with multiple all-stars among them already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying like it wasn't an easy out, but when you have a young, inexperienced team like that, of course, like for the most part, the more experienced team is going to win.
Well, isn't the point of the seven-game series is to, you know, the best team with the best talent is going to end up winning. That's what ended up happening.
Right.
They were still a good team, but it was like 2012, 2013. No, it was 2011, 2012 Heat team was just so dominant.
Yes.
That it wasn't a close series.
It wasn't, no. But that's also because you have, you know, All-Star and Hall of Famers like D-Wade and Chris Bosh. That's one of the other things I wanted to bring up, because you brought up how in you know, when they went to the finals the first time against the Mavericks, you know, like, yes, you mentioned, yes, LeBron didn't show up, but, you know, Chris Bosh was, like, non-existent. But historically, when you look at players in Chris Bosh's position, prior to him joining the team, he was one of the top, you know, 5-6 players in the league. He was one of the most sought-after power forwards. But when he came to Miami, he had to fit a certain system, which kind of made him not take a backseat, but like a backseat. He became the third option. He was no longer the number one option. Same thing happened to Kevin Love when they joined forces in Cleveland. Kevin Love was like a double-double machine. But when you play alongside someone like LeBron James, you're going to take a far back seat. And you saw Kevin Love's numbers drop, and he was never really the same. You know, he had like a couple of, you know, big games here and there. But, I mean, look what happened when LeBron left and went back to Cleveland. Chris Bosh then became like the main guy in Miami. He was their number one option. He was scoring like 28 points a game that season before he had to shut it down because of blood clots.
Yeah,
right.
You know, so that kind of brings me into my next point, which is, you know, we're talking about them as players and them as teammates. So let me ask you this, Lawrence. In your opinion, who is the better teammate, LeBron or Jordan?
I mean, I guess it depends. I guess LeBron makes his teammates better players, right? Mm-hmm. But Jordan makes them mentally stronger, I would say.
Agreed.
What's your take, Nat?
See, because they had different approaches, LeBron and MJ. MJ always wanted to win, but LeBron also didn't want to win as well, but he wanted to be the best like he can be as well. Because Jordan always believed that he was the best, you know, regardless. But LeBron, on the other hand, he always wanted to strive for greatness. That's his usual tagline, strive for greatness. So I think that in terms of being a better teammate, I think personally it's LeBron James. I mean, after you lead a team down 3-1 to the finals, we all saw that quote. He was like, if you're not thinking that we're going to win, don't go on the effing plane. Like, don't try to, you know, go on the plane. Like, that kind of thing. He leads a team from down 3-1 in the finals to victory. Like, that in itself, as a teammate, you know, whether it's, you know, personally or on the court, bringing them the victory like that, that's GOAT right there. That's GOAT.
Yeah, like, I think he shows, like, that, you know, like, the quote, you're only strong as your weakest link. I think LeBron really makes even like the bad players on his teams better, right? Like he brings them to like their best potential and makes them role players that he can use to make himself better.
Right.
So here's my argument to that, right? You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Yes.
Where was Dion Waiters? Where was J.R. Smith?
You mean in this year's finals?
Where was Danny Green?
Danny Green was there.
Where was Kyle Kuzma? Wow. Right? Like, see, like LeBron, in theory, LeBron teaches his teammates, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. Michael Jordan made his team believe there are no weak links in our team. Mm-hmm. You kind of see that in the way that they played, the way that they run practice, the way that they are as teammates. You saw the documentary, you know, there was a point in time where teammates were even afraid of Michael Jordan. Like, you might make the argument like, I don't want somebody like that to be my teammate. You know, I don't want to be teammates with somebody that I fear. Mm-hmm. You know, one wrong mistake, you know, and like, that's it. But at the same time, also in that interview, they stated that they became better players because of that. Right? Like, if you look at Miami and how they're built right now with Heat culture, they don't let things slide. They call each other out for every little thing, even in practice. And that holds them to, you know, higher accountability. You have to be reliable. You can make the same argument for LeBron, right? But if you remember in the 2017 NBA Finals with J.R. Smith's, like, blunder, you know, one of the most infamous plays of all time in NBA Finals history. Yeah. You saw visibly LeBron's frustration.
For sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or I'll never forget. There was a clip in LeBron's first season. You know, somebody, like, he helped somebody up, and he gathered his guys in, like, a quick huddle, and he was like, listen, you know, if your brother's on the floor, you help him up.
Okay, okay, I know what you're going to talk about.
Game three of the 2020 NBA Finals. Kyle Kuzma makes one of the most ridiculous no-look behind-the-head passes I've ever seen. LeBron looks at him and then walks away.
Well, I mean, that's Kyle Kuzma, man. Like, what do you expect? Yeah. This guy's a clown.
Yeah,
he's a certified clown.
Your brother's on the floor. Pick up LeBron left him there.
You think Jordan would do something differently?
Huh? So,
with JR and with Kuzma, you think Jordan's gonna do something different?
See, like,
he's gonna do the great teammate thing to do.
I took note of this too, right? You saw, even one of the other things I noticed too in the NBA Finals, I think it was after game three, where there's 10 seconds left in the game and LeBron left the floor. Right? To a lot of people, like, that's a big no-no. That's like the most unsportsman thing you can do is leave the floor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get it. Everybody gets frustrated. We all handle frustration differently. Mike got so close so many times, you know, in the 80s to making it to the NBA Finals, but he kept getting bounced by a Pistons team or a Celtics team. And what he had to do each and every single time was, while that team was celebrating, he stayed on the court to congratulate them. Right? If there was something wrong that a teammate did on the floor, Mike, you wouldn't see, you know, he wouldn't wear his heart on his sleeve necessarily. It would happen, like, on the sideline during a timeout, during a quick huddle, whatever. You see him, like, talking things out. Or they might have happened, you know, behind closed doors during practice. Like, hey, you know, that stupid pass that you made? Yeah, we can't be having that in the NBA Finals. You know what I mean? I feel like that's one of the major differences between the two of them. For me personally, you know, playing on, like, different teams and stuff like that, as a point guard – You see it. Certain teams, like, for example, a teammate gets the open ball. You know, he's wide open, takes the shot, and he misses. And then the other teammate's like, yo, you're wide open. Why didn't you hit that? You know, and it kind of, like, hurts the person's feel, like, oh, man, you know, like, I feel bad now.
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of like what, you know, when JR made that blunder. You know, that's, you know, what do you, you know, and, like, he tried to hold his tongue, you know.
Yeah.
You want to talk to JR the rest of the time. One of the things Rajon Rondo was brought in for, right, starting since last season, he had to talk to LeBron about his body language, especially around the young guys. You know, that's a report that came out. And that's because he would become visibly upset when there was a mistake made. And it would make these guys who idolize LeBron and, you know, oh, my God, I'm playing with my idol. Oh, no, he's upset with me. And then all of a sudden they're out of funk, you know, they're out of whack, they're messing up, they're in practice or in game. And Rajon Rondo had to pull LeBron aside and be like, yo, you can't be doing that. You know, that won't fly here. You kind of have to keep your composure because these guys look up to you. So LeBron had to change that.
Yeah.
But with Mike, it wasn't anything that he necessarily had to change. Like, that was just how he was. Like, he was just built to, you know, when it comes to – he would do it in practice. You know, if he saw people getting lax or getting lazy – he forced you competitively during practice. You also saw it with the 92 Dream Team. Mm-hmm. You know, number one, they got blown out by college kids, you know, the first scrimmage. The second scrimmage, he's like, yo, I'm guarding Allen Houston. So verbally, he's like, you know, I got this guy. So his teammates see, like, oh, he's taking this serious. Like, he's going hard. Mm-hmm. There's reports Allen Houston during that scrimmage, he didn't touch the ball the whole game because Mike had him on lock. You saw it with, you know, when the Dream Team scrimmaged each other, how Mike and Magic Johnson were going back and forth, and he wasn't backing down, and he carried that intensity, forcing his teammates to have that same intensity. That's the thing with Mike, was he led by example. I'm not saying LeBron doesn't lead by example, but he also kind of practices what he preaches. And nothing against LeBron. He's an amazing player. He's an amazing teammate. But there's just sometimes where I see things where it's like, do as I say, not as I do. You know, like, for example, not picking up your brother. Like, it's like little things like that that stand out to me.
Yeah.
But then again, that pass was also ridiculous, though. But even I would have been like, nah, I'm not going to you up. Like, nah, I guess just go, you know, get up yourself. Like,
boy, what was that?
Yeah.
talking about them as teammates. Let's talk about them as players individually. As players, who do you think is the more mental tough player, Lawrence?
I would say Jordan. Like, I can't even argue about that.
Agreed. Same here, Jordan, the whole way through.
Do you think that hinders LeBron's GOAT status, not being mentally tough? Do you think that that kind of throws a wrench in?
Lawrence, you go ahead, bro.
Yeah, it kind of does. I can't even defend that.
Me personally, I don't think so. Because I think that even though LeBron was not mentally tough per se, I think his numbers proved it anyways. Like the way, like how he produced and what he did on the floor, you know, kind of, I guess like it balances out with this lack of, or not as much of mental toughness than MJ. But I think he was able to, you know, do his best on the court and, you know, kind of make up for that lack of mental toughness.
I like that you mentioned like LeBron as a player on the court, right? Mm-hmm. I did some research talking about being on the court as players.
Okay.
You know how many seasons LeBron has played all 82 seasons? I mean, all 82 games?
Yeah. It was like everyone except that Lakers season, right?
Oh, no, that was different. I said like he had one, you know, both he and Jordan had missing years. You know, they each had a missing year, you know, for their respective, you know, teams. But I'm just talking about games, you know, like how many seasons has LeBron played all 82 games? The answer is one.
Not much. Yeah.
He's played one. Talking about, you know, players being, you know, them being leaders on the court. Michael Jordan played 9 seasons where he played all 82 games. Now you can make the argument like, that was then, this is now. Now you have teams controlling load management, controlling minutes, player health. You know, this the way the league is now is it's all about resting your stars because that's your moneymaker. That's what's going to draw in the most attraction.
Right.
To me personally, I feel like that hinders LeBron's GOAT argument because I'm almost positive if LeBron played in this decade, he would be like, F that. Like, I want to play every game because that's what gives us the best chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the type of player Mike was because he was super ultra competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was able to, he would play all 82 games. Now, mind you, Mike played a total of 15 seasons. Even in his last season with the Washington Wizards, he played all 82 games at 41 years old.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? I think it's more of LeBron being more like body conscious or more like longevity in mind. I think he's more, you know, aware that he needs to take care of his body and he's obviously invested so much money into his body and wants to rest, I guess, these certain days in the season. And, you know, maybe that's why he hasn't played all these games in these seasons.
Right. Which I agree with. And, you know, all the more, especially when you're a star athlete, you're the face of the league, you have to. Mm-hmm. But that kind of plays into my argument that the eras in which they play, right?
Right.
All the knowledge that the, you know, players have now in terms of, you know, speedy recovery, in terms of healing faster, in terms of getting your body right for an NBA season. During, you know, the 80s and 90s, players didn't really have that. It was all about weight training and, you know, gaining mass, which is what Mike had to do. You know what I mean? And so, like, he didn't have the luxury of knowing like, oh, you know, if I do like, what is it? Like a
cryotherapy or?
Yeah. You know, if I had one of those chambers, you know, for speedy year recovery, like who knows? Who knows what kind of numbers he would have been putting up? You know what I mean? And like, I also think just physically them as, I almost don't want to get into this because it's like.
Don't you say it.
What do you think I'm going to say?
Are you saying that physically MJ was better physically than LeBron, like built wise?
I don't think build wise, like physique wise. I mean, LeBron's a freak of nature. There's nobody like him.
Right.
With the exception of maybe a Zion if he shed some pounds. But like, I don't know why. And like, it hurts me to bring this up because I'm a Miami guy, but the image that keeps playing in my mind with LeBron is when they were playing the Spurs in the finals in San Antonio and there was no AC. And LeBron started cramping. And he started crying. And like the argument or the comparison to that is like, you know, he's over here, like he had to be carried off the court. Meanwhile, you know, Jordan's playing with the flu. He felt like he was hit by a train. God.
The flu game.
Flu.
Oh, he my goodness. He
still dropped like 30 or something like that.
But in air conditioning.
Oh, man. LeBron couldn't even finish the game. I think he had to exit the game.
But, I mean, like, you are right, though. Like, it's all different eras. It's hard to compare both of them because they all played under different circumstances. They played under different, standards, I would say. But
there's something else I wanted to bring up in terms of, you know, physicality. I don't recall ever seeing Michael Jordan flop.
Oh, here we go with the flop.
Generational thing, too.
Here we go with the flopping. It is, yeah, Lawrence is right. It is generational. Because it's all about getting the calls nowadays, you know, with the refs. You know, and acting and, like, faking everything. Like, it's just part of the game now. You can't just, yep. You know.
So I'll make the argument for LeBron James in this case, right? LeBron does flop. But an argument could be the reason he flops is because he doesn't necessarily get the calls that he's supposed to.
Yes.
LeBron is 6'8". And I think now he's down in weight, but at one point in time was 250.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're that large, refs aren't going to hear or see you get, you know, hit, nudged, whatever the case may be, especially when you're that size and you're moving down the lane like a freight train, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, of course, he would have to flop in order to get those calls, because if he doesn't flop, the refs aren't going to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But going back to MJ, even if MJ wasn't getting the calls, I still don't think he would flop. He would just suck it up.
Was flopping common, though, in that era?
It was not.
No.
But
it wasn't a strategic thing.
My argument against Mike in this case, right? So I'm on your guys' side on this. Mike never had to flop in order to get calls because he was Michael Jordan. And if he told the ref, hey, I got fouled, the ref would call foul.
Yeah.
But that kind of solidifies my argument that, you know, that's GOAT status when you're telling the ref, hey, yeah, I got fouled there.
And then like, he would give it to MJ?
LeBron is like such a physical specimen compared to all these other people that he's playing, right? I would argue mm-hmm. that in Jordan's time, he was playing like the bigger people, right? So, yeah, he was going to get the calls because he was the smaller guy. But in LeBron's case, he's the bigger guy.
Yeah, he's the big, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to flop.
So one of my my closing arguments, right? We talked about this in the last podcast, how many times MJ has been. I think he won it a few times. It might have been just one, but he was all defense a few times, multiple times rather. He was defensive player of the year and most valuable player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Them as players. Who is the better defender, Mike or LeBron?
All right. Me personally, LeBron.
Okay. What's your argument?
I mean, think about it. I think that LeBron.
Because I'm going to shut this down, too. I have some stuff here for you. But go ahead.
You know what? No. I'm going to just say one thing. Ready? Chase on block.
I knew it.
Can Jordan do that? I don't know. I don't know about that, but
he did it at 41 years old.
but the way in the finals though, saving that game like that, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Michael Jordan got the ball stolen from him. He faced him down and pinned it on the backboard.
Did you see LeBron facing the Warriors? 41
years old.
Yeah, remember he let him steal the ball and go for the layup, and then he gave him the chase down block.
Right. Dude, and even in this previous finals, locking down Jimmy Butler like that at his age.
I'll get to that in a minute. Lawrence, what's your argument? Who do you think is the better defender?
I mean, I think it's also different too, right? Like Jordan had to, you know, defend against the guards, and LeBron here, he's defending up against, you know, other forwards and then centers too. I don't know. I say LeBron has the tougher assignments personally. I'm going to have to go LeBron, better defender.
Facts.
Here's my argument to that. Michael Jordan, for whatever series, you know, whatever finals, Michael Jordan always guarded or wanted to guard the best player on the opposing team. You brought up not too long, you know, a few moments ago, LeBron locking down Jimmy Butler. My argument to that is he didn't do that all series.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't guard Jimmy every game. He didn't guard Jimmy, you know, all 48 minutes.
Okay.
Right? Michael Jordan wanted to guard the very best. And even then, if he couldn't, for example, one of the more iconic defensive plays of Michael Jordan is, you know, the 1998 NBA Finals against the Utah Jazz, stealing the ball from Karl Malone and ultimately leading to this shot, which gave them the championship.
Yes.
Even when he had somebody else that he was assigned to guard, he found a way to involve himself in the defense to give his team the best chance to win, like stealing the ball from one of the best big men in the league at the time, Karl Malone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying to think, you know, I feel like this year you can't really hold that against LeBron because he is getting up there in age. But if you look at their series against, say, for example, the Warriors, you know, how many times or how many consecutive games or how many minutes consecutively was LeBron guarding KD? My argument to that also is how many times would the best defender on the opposing team bother or hinder LeBron James and heavily affect LeBron James, you know, because of what they do defensively.
Right. But then again, like, the defensive schemes in today's era were totally different than in MJ's era. Like, I don't think there were any, like, double teaming in, like, the 90s or, you know, was that even a thing back then?
Oh, yeah, there was. Trapping, double teaming, yeah. That was a big thing.
Was it? Okay.
You know, especially when Mike in the 80s, because, you know, a lot of his high-scoring games, he was being double-teamed and whatnot because he was the only player on his team.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Zone. Was zone a thing back in the 90s, like zone defense?
No, not so much, no.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Like, that's another thing, too, about today's era, you know, and that era compared to that era, there's, you know, zone's pretty popular nowadays. So, you know, that's also a thing, too.
See, like, but for me, one of the other things that stands out to me in my mind, right, like, I see all these great defensive players like Michael Jordan had to go up against. You know, for example, like in the 97 playoffs against the, was it 97 where they played the Supersonics? You know, he was completely torching that team until they finally put
Gary Payton
on him. Yeah. Yep. You know, and like, it looked like Gary Payton was giving him a hard time, but I mean, Mike was still putting up crazy numbers. The image that sticks out to me is the 2013-2014 NBA playoffs, both series, where every time Kawhi Leonard came off the bench and was put in, and his main objective was to guard LeBron James. They have clips of it all over like Instagram and stuff like that, where as soon as he checks into the game, LeBron is physically he's upset. And you see,
yeah, I see that. Yeah,
he's like, man, come on, because he didn't want to have to deal with Kawhi.
That's the nice version of what he said.
Yeah,
the nice version. I don't know, but that just kind of like points to how important it was to lock down LeBron too. Like, you need to put one, you know, like, you need to like focus all of your attention on LeBron if you were the other team to just like lock him down.
I mean, it was the same for during MJ's time. I mean, they would throw the kitchen sink at him. I mean, to the point to where they were causing physical bodily harm to him in order to slow him down.
Speaking of that, did you see Isaiah Thomas's recent interview? I think on a podcast or something like that, saying that like he never saw MJ as competition at all.
Yes.
You see that?
Yes.
So, I mean, well, what does that say? You know?
I'm glad you bring that up because that brings me to my next point, right? All throughout the 90s, early 90s up until he retired, Michael Jordan was known and seen as the best player in the NBA. No doubt about it. There was no question about it. Agreed. There was no like, oh, no, this person is. Oh, no, this person could take the throne. No. It was clear cut. Michael Jordan was the best player in the NBA. Can the same be said for LeBron?
Yes.
So confident.
So my argument to that, right? You hear it all the time. Even just in the past 2-3 seasons, Kevin Durant is the best player in the NBA. He's the best player on the planet.
Kawhi Leonard is now the best player in the NBA playoffs.
Kawhi?
So,
yeah.
I don't want to be hearing
that. They were saying that last year.
They were.
Look at any game announcer, any sports center, you know,
okay.
Rundown.
Perfect, perfect. KD. KD joined the Warriors, 73-9 team. Kawhi, just this past season, lost a 3-1 lead to the Nuggets in the second round.
Yep.
What do you mean, best in the world right here?
But that's what I'm saying. The fact that in previous seasons, right, the entire time KD was with the Warriors, he was arguably the best player in the world. Everybody saw him as the more dominant player because of what he would do in the NBA Finals, especially on LeBron James. Great. Kawhi Leonard did the same thing where Kawhi Leonard, you know, just last season was – there were arguments that he is the best player right now in the league because there was no KD.
Yeah, no KD, no LeBron that year too. Right. So can you really say that he was the best player?
But my argument is that the fact that they're even talking about other people perhaps being the best player, you know, there's even little shades, you know, of talk in the mid to, you know, 2010s with Curry being the best player because he changed the game and all these, you know, scoring outputs that he had.
Mm-hmm.
But you look back in the 90s, nobody ever saw anyone else as the best player in the NBA except for Michael Jordan. Like, nobody would argue that in the 90s.
Well, because I think personally that the NBA kind of, I think they kind of glorified Michael Jordan back then.
They did the same thing with LeBron. They anointed him the next chosen one. He coming out of high school, he was anointed the chosen one.
No, I know, but like, did the NBA like,
he's been
like,
getting some respect past few years.
Yes.
Yeah.
You calling the Wash King?
Exactly. Oh. Did that ever happen to Mike? Never. Even when he retired for the second time. There's a story in the book I'm reading. There's a story where Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker were talking trash to Mike. And the coach or his assistant or something for the Boston Celtics pulled them aside and said, don't talk smack to him. Don't even look at him. Don't even talk to him. And they were telling him, like, oh, this is our league now. You know, don't even think about coming back. And then all Mike did was smile and say, oh, we'll see about that. And what did he do? The next season, he came out of retirement to play for the Washington Wizards. And he destroyed the Celtics.
Yeah. Did he win a chip?
No. He's 41 years old playing with a bum team. That's grandpa status in the NBA.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's his league. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to add to, or do you want to save it for the third and final installment?
I'm gonna keep my cards close to my chest right now. But I will say that you definitely strengthened your argument tonight. You definitely made a case for yourself.
You did.
That's a redeem myself.
I would say we got game one. This is game two. You got that. We're in a limited game three episode. You know, LeBron is a better elimination game player, so I mean...
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
Well, I mean, Mike's the go, you know, the greatest of all time, so he has that on his side, so...
I mean...
And also for show, we'll make it even. We'll have 2-2.
I'll have my boy join
Exciting.
Us. Yeah, so stay tuned.
I can't wait.
That. Sounds good.
All right, guys. Till next time, everybody stay safe, stay healthy. See you in the next episode.
This has been a Fuse Podcast original, produced by yours truly, Nat, with music by Johnny C.